Good day, everyone. Welcome back to Dreams Warp, the podcast designed to awaken you to a new reality. For today's episode, we're going to be covering everything you ever wanted to know about anxiety, worry, how to manage it, and how to heal from it. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. All right, let's go ahead and get into this. My name is George, and if this is your first time here, first I want to say thank you for checking out the podcast. The purpose of the podcast is to explore the mind and the depths of the consciousness that create it. Ultimately, the podcast is here to help you gain a sense of mastery over your reality and your life through mastery of the mind. So if that's something that interests you, you have definitely come to the right place. I am a practicing psychotherapist, been doing that for about 16 years now, and I've been a practicing Zen Buddhist for about 13 years now. So I've literally worked with hundreds, if not thousands of people, helping them basically change the way they think. I hope that you get value out of this episode. And if you get value in the contents of this podcast, I hope you'll also consider sharing it with others who you think may benefit from that. So we have a couple of series here on the podcast. We have our Tuesday Taoism. We have our Zen stream on Sunday. And I try to throw in an extra episode now and then, like this one, where we cover a topic related to other things, you know, mental health, meditation, mindfulness, manifesting, basically anything and everything that helps you reach your goals, achieve your dreams, just live an overall happier day-to-day life. And one of the big issues that I have been noticing lately in my work is there is just this incredible surge of individuals who are suffering with anxiety, some form of anxiety, whether it's anxiety disorder, panic disorder, or really just a type of depression that manifests a lot of worries or regrets about the past, worries about the future. It's really hesitate to maybe use this word, but it's like an epidemic of our times right now, is so many people struggling with anxiety, with worry, with fear. And it's just been something that I've, for some reason, in the last couple of weeks, I've been noticing over and over again, patients that I work with coming in, many with more than one diagnosis. I often say people usually don't fit neatly into one diagnosis. There's usually, you know, a few things going on, but anxiety is just, it's almost always there. It's always part of the picture. And I wanted to share with you, I've touched on this topic before here on the podcast and on the YouTube channel a few times, but I wanted to kind of go into this in a little more depth today. This may be a longer episode because I really want to give you a lot of value and a lot of information on anxiety, why it's so important to get anxiety managed better. And finally, I want to give you some really tried and true techniques that I have used for many years to help individuals with anxiety. And I hope that I'm able to, through this medium, this podcast, present something to you that maybe you can use. Obviously, as I always say, this podcast should never be a substitute for real, mental health treatment. My purpose here is not to treat, diagnose, cure anything. I'm basically just sharing information and providing education based on my experience. So, all that being said, I want to talk to you, kind of get the ball rolling here and talk a little bit about fear, because fear is really the underlying thing here, right? Whether we're talking about anxiety, whether we're talking about worry, whether we're talking about panic, whether we're talking even to some extent about PTSD, underlying all of these is fear. We can say that fear can manifest, or you could, I don't know what the point would be, but you can kind of label different intensities of fear with these kinds of words. So maybe anxiety would be a slightly lower level of fear. It's like a constant nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach. It causes many, and I'm going to get it more into this in a minute, but it causes a lot of biological effects on the body. But you move from there to something like panic, which is a very acute form of anxiety and a fear. Many people have described panic attacks that I've worked with as, you know, they felt like they were having a heart attack. There's a tightness in the chest, the breath changes, you know, heart rate goes through the roof, starts sweating. You feel like the walls are closing in on you. I mean, I'm sure if you've experienced, you know exactly what it is that I'm talking about. But under all of these various forms of these conditions, we find fear, right? And we need to talk about fear just a little bit because we obviously need fear to some extent, right? Fear is very closely connected to our fight-flight response. In a sense, when there's danger, we are supposed to respond with some degree of fear, hopefully not a paralyzing fear where we can't do anything. But fear is basically our body and our brain's indicator to us that, you know, we need to protect ourselves. We need to either defend ourselves or run or, okay, so I'm not going to go too far into that. I think it's pretty obvious. We do need fear to some extent in order to, again, it's just connected to our drive to survive. But here's the question is, how do we differentiate normal fear or healthy fear, if that makes sense, from the type that is not healthy, the type that is not needed, the type that is kind of grown out of control or out of proportion? And really the main way that I've always found works well with most people I've worked with is to ask yourself this, or look at it this way. If there's a situation in your present environment, in this present moment where you are under threat, you are in some form of danger, there is some, you know, violent thing happening, or there's some, you know, something directly in the moment, basically, that can cause you harm or someone you love could cause them harm, and you're feeling a lot of fear, you can say that is a healthy form of fear, that is basically biologically built into us to defend ourselves, to run, et cetera, like I was just describing. But that is a very, very, very small percent of the time, right? Most individuals who suffer with anxiety, with panic, it's not really related to something that is happening currently. It is more related to possible things that could happen or memories from the past, things that have already happened. Generally, I would cautiously state that it's really a large amount is more about future things that might happen, right? But even if we pierce a little bit deeper into this, it's interesting. And this is something I feel that is very important to just consider here, is that it's not really about the things that could happen. Okay, I want to invite you here to look at this a little differently. It's not necessarily a fear about things that could happen. What we're really looking at is an emotional response, okay, and not only emotional, but a biological response to our own thoughts that are happening in the present moment, okay? So it's almost like you have to look at it a little different. So concrete example, let's say I have a job interview coming up. I don't know, just random example, right? And I have a lot of anxiety about this, a lot of fear. And I don't mean just like I'm a little nervous, a little butterflies in my stomach. I mean, I'm having trouble sleeping, I'm having trouble eating, I'm having trouble concentrating, focusing. You know, I'm feeling my heart rate is up. You know, I feel very, very, very anxious, very nervous about this. Now, it's not really the job interview in the present moment that is the problem, because the job interview isn't even here, right? It's not, right? Right now, the real issue is the thoughts about it, okay? And it's important to make that distinction. It's very, very important to make that distinction, because there's nothing we can do about the job interview. It's not here. It doesn't exist yet. What does exist, what is present in this moment, are the thoughts about it, okay? So we are not truly, truly in ultimate reality, where the anxiety, the nervousness is not about the interview. It's about the thoughts. It's about the thoughts that we're having in the present moment. and the way those thoughts are the way we are reacting emotionally, biologically to those thoughts, okay? And that's very, very important distinction to make. Now, just a little bit of stuff about anxiety, panic, and even our fight-flight response that are good for you to know about. Like I said in the intro, I'm giving you more than you ever wanted to know, okay? But this stuff hopefully will provide some insight and also, I think, motivate you to really, really, really start doing something about this if it's something that you are living with, okay? And I'm talking here not just to individuals who have like a full-blown, you know, diagnoses of anxiety disorder, panic disorder. I'm talking to what I really think is most people. Most people today and age live with some degree of anxiety. It varies from person to person, obviously, but many, many people suffer from anxiety on a daily basis. And that's really who I'm talking to here, okay? It's not just individuals who have this diagnosis. It's really all of us, because I myself, when I was a child, growing up in my 20s, I had a lot of anxiety. And I could easily, you know, go into reasons for it. Oh, my childhood, this and this and this and that happened. And those things may be true, but that really doesn't change how I need to change, you know, how I need to alter the way that I'm dealing with that anxiety as it arises in the present moment. Okay. And one thing, like I said before, it's always about looking at the thoughts and the emotional reaction to the thoughts in the present moment. Now, if you live with anxiety, with worry, and something that is very interesting to me, biologically speaking, is that when we look at something, for example, like the epitome of our fear response, which is the fight-flight effect, okay, the fight-flight switch, I call it, in the brain. And that basically is where fear hits its absolute highest level. And this is, of course, things that we experience when we are in life-death situations. So if you have ever been in a horrible car accident, you've ever experienced a trauma, you know, situation where you could have lost your life or someone you love could have lost their lives. You know, I'm talking about real, real, you know, extreme situations, earthquakes, natural disasters, fires, I mean, real life death stuff. Then you know what that fight flight experience feels like. And many things happen physically. And I always tell patients I've worked with that anxiety is a unique anxiety disorder, panic disorder is unique among a lot of the mental illnesses or mental conditions in that it, when you feel symptoms of it, you feel them very much in your body, right? Other mental illnesses, you do sometimes feel it in your body, depression, you can feel very tired, low energy, stuff like that, but nothing quite like anxiety and panic. It fully, fully, fully manifests in the body physically. Like I said earlier, muscles tighten, you start sweating, your heart rate changes, your blood pressure changes, your breath changes, your teeth may start chattering. It's very, very physical in the way that it presents itself. And like I was just saying, it's a physiological response to, in the case of fight flight, to a real danger that's happening in the present moment. Now, interestingly, when fight flight engages, right, when all those physical changes happen, it's pretty remarkable what the body is able to do. I've worked with a lot of individuals who have been, you know, injured during their trauma. And for example, they will say, you know, I didn't even know I was injured. I didn't even know. It's like you go numb, okay? Also, people have said that suddenly they're able to like run like the wind. I mean, like flash, okay? They're able to run like lightning, not to make light of it. But the point is that your body, when it goes into fight flight, you suddenly have strength you never knew you had. You're suddenly able to run faster than you've ever ran. You're suddenly able to like numb out many injuries. You're just completely, it's almost like going into shock, okay, is another way to put it. Now, where do you think the body comes up with the energy to go into fight flight? Because it requires a tremendous amount of energy to go into fight flight. And basically how the body does it is that it borrows energy from other systems. So for example, your sexual drive completely erased in the midst of a trauma, right? All thinking about past or future completely stops. Immune system response stops. Digestion stops. Also, kind of obvious, but any sleep, any, you know, that kind of, those kind of functions completely stop. And because all these other systems have basically frozen, suddenly you have access to this tremendous amount of energy in that moment, like I said, to either fight or to run. Now, one other little caveat here is that many freeze also. Okay, so that's another possibility. But the point is that I'm getting at here is that when you look at individuals who suffer from, for example, something like PTSD or anxiety disorder, one of the things you start to notice is, and it's very, I don't know how much detail I should really go into here, but the idea is basically this, is that when you live with a lot of anxiety for a long period of time, you may start to notice that some of those same bodily other systems that tend to shut down during a trauma, when you have anxiety for a long period of time, those systems also tend to get affected. So in other words, maybe you're not, obviously you're not in the middle of a trauma all the time, but if you're living with heightened levels of anxiety, you may notice that you have issues with sex drive, with sleep, with appetite, with digestion, with immune system. So you may find yourself getting sick more often. You may find yourself having trouble sleeping. You may find yourself, you know, having low sexual drive. You may, all those same systems. And why does this happen? Because, again, that biological response, if the body is in a constant state of tension, of anxiety, of alertness, of fear, in order to keep you in that state, okay, for your for those changes to be, again, not full on fight flight, but you're kind of somewhere in the middle, okay, your body is still borrowing from those other systems to keep you there. So it's very, and I say all that to say this, is that it's very, very important if you have any kind of fear or anxiety that you live with on a regular basis, over long term, after 10, 20, 30 years, you can start to see some severe effects on your body as a result of living with this constant anxiety. Now, I'm going to pause here for a quick second, take a break. Let me take a breath and allow a word from a sponsor. And I'll be right back and start talking to you about how we can start to address this right here, right now, and hopefully get it better managed. Okay, just bear with me a moment. All right, I am back. Thank you for your patience. Let me take a quick moment here and tell you that if you ever want to ask a question, make a suggestion for a future podcast episode, or express a concern, you can always email me at elucidatetherial@gmail.com. You can also leave a comment on any one of my YouTube videos. Doesn't matter which one. Just go over to the YouTube channel, search for Dreams Warp on YouTube. You'll find it and post a comment under any one of the videos. I get notified right away, and I could respond to you that way. Also, I very recently started up a Twitter account, and I do post things there once a day, and I also retweet some good stuff that I find. And they serve as good little reminders throughout the day to you know, focus on your practice and motivate you. So definitely follow me on Twitter for that good stuff. And finally, I'd like to say that if you're enjoying this content, this podcast, and you are on Apple Podcasts, it'd be great if you could leave me a quick rating and a review. That'd really help out the podcast. All right. So all that being said, we talked a lot about the problem in the first half, right? We talked about anxiety. We talked about panic. We talked about PTSD. We talked about fight flight. We talked about how biological it is and the effect that living with a condition like that can have on your body over time. So very, very important to get that better managed. And besides, I mean, who wants to, let's say you don't have any of those physical symptoms yet, fine, but who wants to live with that kind of mental noise all the time? I don't. And that is what we're going to get into now, is how we can start to change some of this stuff, okay? Now, this is stuff that I've touched on in other podcast episodes and on the YouTube channel. But one of the things I find in individuals when I'm working with them on anxiety, on panic, on worry, on PTSD stuff, is that it is in the midst of an anxiety attack, okay, or if you've been living with anxiety for a long time, or even if you just have a mild case, once you are in that kind of nervous state, okay, it is very difficult, if not impossible, and I actually find it kind of annoying when friends, family, or even some therapists will tell you, oh, just don't think about that, you know, think about something else, you know, go calm down, you know, it's going to be okay, don't worry, right, just turn it off, right, like you could do that, right, that would be nice if we could, right, and sometimes, let me be clear, sometimes there are certain strategies of like distraction, right, where you can plug into a movie or, you know, plug into maybe a video game or start reading a book or maybe go out to the park, you know, and change of scenery, change of, you know, again, distraction. Distraction is what I'm talking about. It could be a little helpful, okay? It could, you know, if you have a mild case, those things can work. I'm not saying that they're all bad and you shouldn't do them. But I just don't feel that they really, really, really address this issue as strongly as we could, okay? So if you're someone that has been using things like distraction and they work well for you, then by all means, keep using them, okay? I'm not knocking that. But I do find that for most people that I work with, that I have worked with, it doesn't quite do it, okay? It doesn't quite fix the issue. Now, the other frustration that I've run across is many people who I've worked with this condition, they also want a quick fix tool. Okay, it's, there's no other way to put it, right? So I want you to tell me something, give me something I can do, something I can take, something I can, that's just going to make it stop, like instantly. I just want this to go away. In the midst of my anxiety, it's so uncomfortable. Give me something that will just make it stop right here, right now. Unfortunately, it doesn't quite work that way. Okay, it just doesn't quite work that way. This is more about what we are doing, and this is something I really, really, really want you to hear, and I really try to drive home as strongly as I can with people I've worked with, and this is the same with anger issues, is that once you are in the midst of that real peak anxiety, it is challenging, not impossible, it is challenging to instantly pull out of it. It's almost as if, picture a spinning plate. You ever seen people spin plates on a stick, right? Once that plate is spinning really, really, really fast, right? The only thing that really slows it down, okay? And the metaphor works all the way through here now that I think about it, but it's time, right? It has momentum. It's spinning and it's just spinning and spinning and spinning. And sometimes when you're already spun up very, very fast in a high level of anxiety, it's about, you know, using distraction, like I mentioned earlier, or waiting basically to just for that momentum to subside, right? So what we really need to focus on instead, okay, instead of finding something to use in that peak anxiety, and this is where people really struggle with this, it's more about what you are doing when you are not anxious that matters, okay? In other words, we need to focus on a prevention approach. We don't want to treat this thing once it's already full-blown, you know, out there. We want to work on prevention as much as possible, okay? And that means looking at what we are doing at times when we're not that anxious, okay? That's really very important, and that applies the same with anger, right? Right? Once you're in a rage, right, there's very little, and those of you out there maybe who've suffered with anger issues, you know this as well. Once you're in the middle of a rage, you're that hot, you're that much in the red, there is very little that someone can do or say that is going to make that anger magically disappear, right? At that moment, at that peak, the only thing you could do is put geographical distance between whatever it is that's making you angry, or chronological distance, meaning time, getting away from the situation, coming back to it later. But effective anger management is about what we're doing when we're calm, same with anxiety. So I'm going to start talking to you about breath work and why is this so important. I know it's almost a cliche, okay? It's almost a cliche, but in all cliches, there's a certain degree of truth. And in this particular case, it's a tremendous degree of truth. But I want to talk to you about different types of breath, why breath works, And I want to get very specific on you on some breathing techniques that you can start using right here, right now, that will help. But again, these breathing techniques, okay, again, in the middle of an episode of anxiety, they can help to some extent, and they will definitely help a lot more if you've been practicing with them when you're not anxious. And that's why, again, I want to reemphasize that the importance of these breath exercises is much higher. The importance is much higher to do them in moments when you're not anxious. Because what you practice when you're not anxious, you're going to be much better at when you are anxious, right? So if I give you a good breathing technique and you only wait to try to use it in moments when you're really, really anxious, going to have very limited effect, very limited effect. But if you're practicing these at times when you're not anxious, right? And you're practicing and practicing every day, you practice them every day, whether you're anxious or not, then when those heightened moments of anxiety come, you're going to be much more masterful at using the breath technique. Okay, that couldn't put that any more clearly. It's very, very important. Same thing when you're learning any new skill, right? You're not going to try to learn it in the midst of a high stress situation, right? If I'm a mechanic and I'm just learning how to use a new tool on a vehicle, I don't want to start just learning how to use it when there's five angry customers behind me, right? I want to use it when it's quiet, when it's calm, that I could focus, that I could just use it calmly, slowly, learn it. And then during those high stress situations, I'll be much better, much more efficient at using it. Okay, this is works exactly the same way. And that's why I emphasize with so many people that it's about using these techniques when you are not anxious. And the problem that many run across is that when they're not anxious, they're not as motivated to do them. It's like, I don't need to do that breathing technique. I'm feeling pretty calm today, right? That is the mistake right there. That is the mistake. We need to do these. I don't care how calm you are. It's important to do these every single day. And why is breathing so effective? Why does this work? Well, again, at the risk of giving you tons of information, we basically have two areas of our nervous system. One is called the sympathetic nervous system. One is called the parasympathetic nervous system. Sympathetic nervous system is associated to activation, which basically means when you are feeling stress, anxiety, worry, fear, it turns on. Sympathetic turns on and basically activates these bodily functions, increases heart rate, increases your breath, increases blood pressure, maybe causes some muscle tension, basically gives you, activates, that's the word, right? It basically energizes you, and it's associated to increases in anxiety and stress and panic. The cortisol starts being pumped out in your brain, and that basically is a neurotransmitter that activates, okay? It works with sympathetic nervous system to kick on fear response and extremes, fight-flight response. That's what sympathetic nervous system does, okay? Parasympathetic nervous system, interestingly, is almost like, in simple terms, the opposite, okay? It's associated with sleep, it's associated with digestion, it's associated with relaxation, with deactivation, okay? So one way to look at anxiety is that you have a very active sympathetic nervous system and a very kind of atrophied parasympathetic nervous system. Now, interestingly, coming back to the breath, okay, is that when you look at all the biological markers of anxiety, which is changes in breathing, changes in heart rate, changes in blood pressure, changes in sweating, muscle tension, all these different things, some of those we can control, right? Some of those are voluntary, right? Some are not, right? Not many people know how to lower their blood pressure, right? Voluntarily. There are some studies, you know, biofeedback. Some people do kind of, you know, with a lot of work can kind of do that a little bit, but it's not really something that we could on a dime just take control over. It's, oh, I want to magically lower my blood pressure right now and boom, it goes down. Doesn't really work like that. Same thing with heart rate. Same thing with sweating. We can't really control those things. Interestingly though, we always, always have control over our breath. Always. And that is one of the greatest gifts available to us, because breathing changes, okay? Just like when we feel more anxious, our breathing changes. The inverse is also true. When we're able to focus on changing how we're breathing, it affects our anxiety, okay? It's reciprocal, okay? You cannot have, and I always tell patients this, you cannot have a tense mind with a relaxed body, just like you cannot have a tense body with a relaxed mind, okay? They work together. And that is an advantage that we have. This is why I go back to saying that when you are feeling very, very anxious, very tense, very panicky, it can be difficult to just change how you're thinking, right? Because the anxiety is very high in your mind. But we are able to change how we are breathing. We always are able to do that, unless you're like full-blown panic, right? But we always have that breathing, that voluntary ability to change how we're breathing. And breathing is very, very powerful in that it actually sends messages to the brain to, I almost see it like if you ever know how to drive stick or you've seen anybody drive stick shift, shifting the way we breathe shifts our sympathetic nervous system response, parasympathetic nervous system response into different gears, okay? But again, we need to practice this. We need to practice this on a regular basis. So I want to share with you three different kinds of breathing that I use on a daily basis. And then I also want to tell you in the end something that will happen as almost like a side effect from learning these three breaths that is going to really, really, to me, made all the difference with anxiety, okay? First breath. Very, very simple. Very, very simple. It's basically what I like to call the meditation breathing. It's the type of breathing that I do when I'm meditating. And you can practice this. It's, again, super easy. All you do, basically, is wherever you are, sitting, standing, wherever, it doesn't matter. All you're going to do is you're not going to manipulate the breath in any way. You're not going to breathe through your mouth, not in through your nose, out through your mouth, nothing like that. Normal breathing. In fact, just quiet breathing, quiet, just normal breath, which no one around you would really notice. And what you're going to do is every exhale, you're going to count it from 1 through 10. So you inhale normally, exhale normally. And when you exhale, you mentally in your mind, just count 1. Inhale again, exhale, count 2. And you're going to go all the way to 10. And then you're going to go back to 1. Okay. Now what this breath does, okay, the main purpose of this breath is that it will improve your concentration. It will improve your ability to focus, because here's what's going to happen. As you start counting these breaths, you're going to notice that your mind starts to get distracted. It'll forget what number you're on. You'll start thinking about something you got to do later. You'll start thinking about a conversation you had yesterday. You'll start thinking about some meeting you have next week. This is what it does. I've been doing this for many, many years. This is what it does. But that's okay. That's kind of normal, okay? But what you want to do is you want to notice when that's happened. And all you do is, oh, I slipped off. And you just start over, go back to 1, okay? Very simple. I would recommend doing this type of breathing for 5 to 10 minutes twice a day. So once in the morning, once in the evening. Doesn't have to be morning, evening. It's just when I do it, I would just say twice a day, even for 5 minutes each time, okay? You just set the timer. You could do it maybe before you head out for your day and just sit there and just count every exhale, okay? Every exhale, 1, inhale, 2, inhale, 3, inhale, 4. You get to 10, you go back to 1. Okay, that is a very, very good technique, especially for improving focus and concentration. Because every time you realize that you've floated off and you bring yourself back to counting, you're refocusing, you're re-concentrating. You're just trying to focus and concentrate on one thing, the counting. Very, very good practice. Now, second breath. This is more what I do as a sort of like an energizing breath, okay? It just makes me feel very good, okay? Look at it that way. It just makes you feel very, very good. And this is what you do is you want to do this one a little more private, okay? You don't want people around you to think you're a weirdo or something. But what you're going to do is you're just going to inhale as profoundly as you can. Very, very deep, strong breath. And then blow it out just as strongly and try to do it a little rapidly, okay? Now, something to keep in mind, that if you do this for too long, you can start to feel dizzy, okay, because you're taking in a lot of oxygen. So just keep that in mind. Do it sitting down, okay? But I find that this one, if you're feeling kind of low, lethargic, low energy, maybe you're feeling a little foggy, it's almost like taking a shot of coffee, okay? That helps to describe the effect. You're just going to do this type of breathing. Inhale, exhale, fast, deep, okay? You want to fill the lungs with air quickly and then pump it out and then do it again. I wouldn't do this one for too long, you know, maybe for a minute or two. And that is just an energizing breath, okay? Very, very good one as well. You do that. I do that one a few times a day, you know, just because it feels good. I like how it feels. Now, third breath. I save this one for last because this is the one that really, really, really targets anxiety and really, really targets that sympathetic versus parasympathetic response. So this breath is basically goes like this. You're basically going to, again, quietly, okay? It seems like a normal breath, but we are going to alter it a little bit. So you're going to inhale normally, just a normal breath, but you do want to try to fill, you know, those lungs with air. And then what you're going to do is before you exhale, you're just going to hold your breath for about a second or two seconds, I would say. Hold it for a couple seconds. And then you're going to exhale all the air out of your lungs. And before you inhale again, you're going to pause for 2 seconds. So you're basically putting a gap or a space of about 2 seconds between each inhale and each exhale. The other factor here, okay, is that you want the inhaling and the exhaling to be as slow as possible, just as long as you're not feeling like you're running out of air, obviously, okay? So you don't want to be doing it so slow that you start feeling like you're running out of air. That's not our desired effect. So you want to feel like you're getting enough air, but you want to go as slowly as you can while still feeling like you're getting enough oxygen, okay? So the breath is very, very slow. Inhale very, very slowly. At the end of the inhale, you just hold for 2 seconds. And then you exhale very, very, very slowly. And before you inhale again, you stop for 2 seconds. If you're going to do this one, okay, I would suggest doing this one 3 times a day and just don't do the first one that I described, which is the counting of the breaths. Now, if you really want to get full, like maximum benefit from what I'm talking about, I would do all 3 of these types of breaths just at different times throughout the day. But if your concern is more the anxiety, then this last breath is the one you want to focus on. And I would recommend doing it 2 to 3 times a day, whether you are anxious or not. Very important, very important. Whether you are anxious or not, you want to do this breathing 2 to 3 times a day. Because what will happen is, after several months of doing it every day, 2 to 3 times a day, you will find that when you're feeling some of that anxiety come on, you do just a few of those breaths and your mind will respond. It basically just, it'll be a habit that you've built, okay? But again, requires that commitment, doing it 2-3 times a day, right? Those are the 3 breaths, okay? You could always, you know, play this again so that you hear it again, you know, maybe you jot it down. And these 3 breaths, now, I'm going to leave you with this. Okay, I know this episode's been a little long, but I hope that it really, you know, helps individuals out there dealing with this kind of issue, and I feel that there's many. But this is really the cool part of this. If you are doing these 3 types of breathing, right, I don't really do the last one that much anymore because I don't have a lot of anxiety issues anymore. But if you are regularly doing these 3 breaths, here's the side effect that happens, is that you start developing a tremendous amount of awareness over your own breathing, over how your body is feeling. You start developing what I like to call an intimacy with your breath. You'll start to really notice how it changes throughout the day. You'll be on top of every time you're breathing almost, I'm able to stop. And am I breathing shallow? Am I breathing heavy? Am I breathing deeply? And I could actually feel the changes that the different types of breathing are having on my mental state, on my mood. It is truly, truly an amazing practice. Something so simple, just the breathing, just the breathing. So again, I highly encourage you, if you have this kind of issue, and I feel that many do, that you take on these practices and see if they benefit you, all right? I really hope that this content helped you today. Once again, any comments, concerns, questions, email me, elucidatethereal@gmail.com, or like I said earlier, leave me a comment on YouTube, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Well, we'll be bringing you another Zen stream on Sunday. Thanks for listening.